From points across California, you're listening to the Disneyland edition of the Diz Unplugged. Hello and welcome to the Diz Unplugged Roundtable Discussion Disneyland edition for April 13th, 2011. I'm your host, Tony Spatel. I'm joined by Disneyland correspondents Wayne Toigo, Tom Bell, and Nancy Johnson. Today, Wayne will discuss the Disneyland monorail. Nancy has a segment about the activities offered to guests staying at the hotels of the Disneyland Resort. All that plus this week's news and roundtable rapid fire on this edition of the Diz Unplugged. Hello, everybody.
Greetings. Hey, guys.
That was exciting. Okay, so we're ready to discuss Disneyland. Let's go. Let's just get going. Anybody have any housekeeping?
I'll start. Very quickly, the Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides premiere event has sold out at Disneyland. It sold out in only 3 days.
Did you get your ticket?
I did not. Sorry.
$1,000 a pop, man.
Yeah, my home loan didn't clear, so I couldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't need to see Johnny Depp that bad. But it did go to a good cause, the Boys and Girls Club of America, which, yay, they're going to get some good cash from that.
Anybody else with housekeeping?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, let's move on to the news. Who's got the news?
That's me this week. That's me. First story. Firefighters extinguished a small fire recently on the construction area where crews are busy building Cars Land. Construction workers were evacuated from the site while firefighters put out the fire, which was limited to a plastic tarp that was covering steel framework about 5 stories high. Welders were working in the area at the time and sparks might have started the fire. The small fire was out within 45 minutes, and no park visitors were affected by the fire, nor were any injuries reported. Cars Land is scheduled to open in 2012. The Disneyland Resort generates about $4.7 billion annually to the Southern California economy. That, according to Disneyland President George Kalogridis at his State of the Resort speech held for community leaders recently. The figures come from a report conducted by C.B. Richard Ellis and is the first conducted in about 5 years. Other figures that were released include: the resort generates $255 million annually in taxes from hotel stays, sales, property, and income taxes. Other figures, about 21,000 employees work at the resort, plus the resort supports 57,400 jobs in Southern California. During the recent economic downturn, we surged ahead, strengthening our investment and capitalizing on the recovery, Kalogridis said. We wanted to make sure that when the economy bounced back, we were there, ready with the best park experience we could possibly offer.
I read that article, too, and I was interested in how much money it actually brings to the economy. Mm-hmm. And also, I think people forget how small Anaheim actually is as a city.
Right.
In terms of Southern California. I mean, it's, if I'm not mistaken, like 350,000 or something like that. That the whole Anaheim resort area generates so much money.
All right, last quick story. I'm sure the Orlando podcast is going to cover some of this, but I just wanted to mention that last week Disney Cruise Line released the remainder of their 2012 itinerary of ports and destinations, and the Disney Wonder is going to be doing a couple new West Coast cruises, including a 15-day cruise to Hawaii and 4 Pacific Coast cruises that will go to San Francisco and San Diego. The Wonder will also be going back to Alaska in the summer of 2012, but will be leaving out of Seattle instead of Vancouver. Those cruises went on sale to the general public last Friday. And that's the news.
Okay, thank you, Tom, for the news. Now it's time for rapid fire, but I'm not going to give you guys a choice. I've been crunching the numbers and looking at the data. I looked at everybody's application. I had some underwriters look at it. And I've decided that based on all the data that I've collected, that Wayne should go first.
Thanks. Okay, great. Thanks, Tony. Let's talk about Vinylmation. Vinylmation is still very popular at the Disneyland Resort. There are new releases of the figures all the time. In fact, there are so many of these characters and styles that it's hard to keep track of what's currently available. Unlike the Disneyland t-shirts, where there are specific types and styles that stay all season, the Vinylmation characters come and go quickly. This is one item where the phrase, if you see it now, you'd better get it, that really applies, because the next time you visit, it likely won't be there. Anyway, I wanted to let you know about a couple of the current sets that are out right now. From the Disney Afternoon, a couple of the DuckTales Vinylmation characters were released this past week. I saw a couple of them. I recognized Scrooge McDuck. He looked really good. This coming Friday, April 15th, will be the release of the new and I think anticipated Muppets 2 series. And there's actually going to be a signing event at D Street in downtown Disney. The artist, his name is Monty Moldovan, will be signing from 2 to 5 p.m. at D Street. Next month, May 21st, D Street will be hosting another signing event with the release of the 9-inch Vinylmation characters focusing on Pirates of the Caribbean. Should be pretty cool. D Street is actually one of the best places to see and purchase the Vinylmation figures, and they always seem to have the latest releases from the various collections. Another place I found that is good for Vinylmation is the Off the Page store in California Adventure. And even if you're really not into collecting these characters, it's fun to stop in and take a look. There are so many characters and styles. They're always changing, and it's just fun to see what's new. I always stop in whenever I'm walking through just to see all the cool new stuff.
Are you a collector, Wayne?
You know what? So far, I only have one Vinylmation character and have resisted the urge to get more, although I really wanted Sorcerer Mickey, but I waited too long and missed it.
Okay. Next person for rapid fire. Now, after the dad is, we're done, you can go ahead and choose who you would like to go next.
Go ahead, Nancy.
Okay. Mine really isn't necessarily a... It's kind of an interesting one. I was actually driving down the street in Burbank the other day and was passed by a biodiesel shuttle coming from the Imagineering in Glendale lot heading over to the main studio. And so what I think is really interesting, because the Disneyland Resort has, you know, really made a big push to switch to biodiesel, which is the oil, the vegetable oil engines in the trams and in the train, that they're now using their employee shuttles up here in Burbank. So they're trying to make our neighborhood a cleaner and brighter place.
And smell like McDonald's.
No, I'm hoping they're smelling like the corn dogs. I mean, they've got the oil. Let's go.
Yeehaw. So anyway, I just thought I would add another little note about Disney's environmentality springing out to the rest of their company.
I have a rapid fire. The Disneyland Resort has begun the process of upgrading their entrance and ticketing software. The new system allows for all passes, including Premier passes, to be swiped instead of keying numbers in by hand individually one by one. This supports the fact that the new annual passes will not require pictures on the passes themselves. As implementation has just begun, not all locations are swipe ready just yet, but look for more of these changes in the future. So I know they're in the process of changing things to be more like Orlando. And I actually got this part of this rapid fire from this morning when I drove in, and they actually were able to swipe our pass and not have to enter those numbers one by one. But it didn't work at the restaurant. They still had to swipe. They just had to enter the numbers one by one by one. So I'm just happy that it's going to speed up the process a little bit.
This has got to be the next step towards making that, rather than a yearly renewal and getting a new pass, this has got to be the step towards you get one pass and use it till you don't want it anymore.
Well, you know, and that's good, because with the whole photos no longer being printed on the passes.
Well, my picture on the photo, on the pass.
Well, and that's weird too, because they're letting. Okay, this is what I find weird about them not taking your photo and putting it on the pass, because they still need the photo for identification. You know, when they swipe your pass, your picture pops up. They're supposedly letting guests upload their own photo.
Ooh,
that'll be interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so that kind of, I'm not real sure how that's going to work.
Is that going to go on the same website with the Splash Mountain photos?
God. Oh, Lordy. Somebody, you know, someone will do that. You totally know.
That's what, we'll find out. Anybody else with another rapid fire?
Oh, I haven't gotten my turn yet, so I'm going to take two.
Oh, well, I've got two also. I was trying to give you one, like, you know, you take a turn, then I take a turn. Uh-huh. So.
Real quick one. Blink, a new clothing store run by Wet Seal, is now open in downtown Disney in the old Ann Geddes building. And that's the end of that rapid fire.
Anybody else with a rapid fire? Wait. Tony, you've got a rapid fire. Sure? Okay, well then, okay, let's go. Well, Tony's got a rapid fire. Let's see what he's got to say. Thank you, Tony. Well, Disneyland is bringing back their dining discount for guests willing to dine at off-peak hours. This time, the discount is 25% instead of the 30 that it was last Christmas, with the purchase of an entree. You must dine before 11:30 a.m. or between 3 and 4:30 p.m. And it's available only in Disneyland for the French Market, Hungry Bear, Rancho del Zocalo, I probably butchered that again, Red Rockets Pizza Port, and Tomorrowland Terrace. The discount coupons can be found on the Disney Parks blog or in the Entertainment Times guide available at the Disneyland main entrance. And these discounts are only available between April 17th and 23rd, which is a lot of people's spring break. Mm-hmm. Anybody else with a rapid fire?
I have one quick one. First clues about this summer's Summer Nightastic promotion are coming out. The magical fireworks are on the schedule starting May 27th. So those are returning. So your last chance to see Remember Dreams Come True fireworks is May 22nd. Also, the new Mickey Sensational Parade was promoted as premiering May 27th, but it is showing up on the times, on the calendar, and starting on May 26th. Ooh. So it looks like it's starting a day early on a Thursday.
Cool. Anybody going to be there right when it starts?
No, but I'm really interested in this one because the floats look phenomenal. They just had some new new sketches out on the blog, on Disney's blog.
That's going to be an ugly weekend. That's Memorial Day weekend.
Yep.
I know. That's going to be crazy, especially with other things that could be, quote, unquote, possibly
soft opening.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Oy. Okay. Yeah, all right, now we're all depressed because the crowds are going to be so huge. Okay, thank you guys for rapid fire, and now moving on to our first segment, Wayne is going to discuss the Disneyland monorail.
Thanks, Tony. I have been thinking about the kinds of stories that I can do here on the podcast, and one of the things I wanted to cover was some of the attractions that have been around almost since the beginning when Disneyland opened. And one of the best-known attractions at Disneyland is the monorail. So today I'd like to give you a bit of the history and the evolution of the monorail system at Disneyland, as well as some of the current operations. Now, before I get started, I wanted to address one of the biggest misunderstandings of the differences between the original monorail system at Disneyland and the system at Walt Disney World. The monorail at Disney World is a necessary transportation system. The monorail at Disneyland is a ride. Many folks don't understand why the Disneyland monorail doesn't stop at more places, why it's so small inside the cabins, and why the track makes so many sharp turns and seems to go around in circles. The reason is because the Disneyland monorail has always been and essentially is still an attraction.
Yep.
With that in mind, let's look back at the Disneyland monorail. Now, in 1957, Disneyland was only a couple of years old. Walt Disney had wanted a monorail for Disneyland all along. In fact, there's actually a wonderful story about how Walt and Lily were traveling in Germany and saw a monorail system and chased it down a little country road to find out what this thing was all about. Found out later that it was actually a test development system. Walt later sent a number of folks from Disney to Germany and began working with the company on a version of their monorail for Disneyland. Now, at that time, Imagineer Herb Ryman had some sketches of a suspended monorail, but later Walt envisioned a monorail train that straddled a concrete beam. This would be the first highway in the sky, and that's where we got that phrase. Young Disney designer Bob Gurr and Roger Brogy were tasked with bringing the monorail system to Disneyland, and it was developed up in the Burbank Studios area. Bob Gurr developed the first Mark I monorail with a rocket ship-style nose and the stylish clear bubble on top of the front car. Then in June of 1959, Vice President Richard Nixon dedicated the opening, and Bob Gurr was actually the first monorail operator. Now, at that time, the monorail only made a small loop around Tomorrowland. It traveled 0.8 miles and stopped at the only station that was there. There were two original monorail trains, Monorail Red, Monorail Blue, and each had only three cars. So when you look and you see old pictures or drawings of the monorail and it only has three cars, in fact, take a look at the hotel water slide. The water slide only has three cars on the new water slide. The monorail itself is actually owned by the company that Walt Disney himself founded. He liked keeping control of his transportation stuff, just like the steam trains. So Walt, instead of Disneyland, could remain in control. A couple of years later, in 1961, the monorail beam was expanded outside the Disneyland park and a secondary station was built at the Disneyland Hotel. Now hotel guests could board the monorail to enter Disneyland. This brought the monorail track to 2.5-mile round trip, and that's still the basic path that the monorail follows today. At that time, the Mark II monorail was introduced, and that one had four cars. By the way, current guests at the Disneyland Resort will note that the secondary monorail stop is in downtown Disney instead of the Disneyland Hotel. Well, the monorail station itself never really moved, but the old shopping arcade and Restaurant Row, which was once a part of the hotel.
That was such a good cafe. I got to interrupt.
Yes, it certainly was.
We agree.
Such a fun place to go to.
And I have to share.
Yeah.
That was one of my go back to the blog and look up the history of Disneyland and stuff, but my wife and I had one of our first like dates. Well, not
aww.
We got out and we but no what we did is we that's when we kind of figured out, hey, you like Disney, so do I. We're driving back from San Diego and you used to be able to do this. I hope I'm not taking anything away from you here, Wayne. You could buy a ticket just to ride the monorail. And so bought a ticket, and so we have the ticket still.
Aww.
Yeah, look up the blog that was celebrating the 55th birthday of Disneyland.
Yes, exactly.
Your story's there.
Yeah, so I use it again. But yeah, you could actually just buy a ticket, ride the monorail, and then we were kind of driving, oh, let's get something to eat. We went to Monorail Cafe.
Yeah.
Did the ticket, and it's not like it's that long ago, but I guess it is starting to get long ago. But that was just reminiscing.
So the monorail station itself never really moved, but the old shopping arcade and Restaurant Row, which was once a part of the hotel, was torn down when they built Downtown Disney, and Downtown Disney then kind of surrounded the station. Then, in 1968, the Mark III trains were introduced with a total of five cars. The Mark IIIs lasted all the way through the late 80s. The Mark IV trains went to Disney World. The Mark II trains were then retrofitted to become the Mark V trains, which debuted in 86. The Mark V featured the sleeker, more streamlined car, and at that time they took away the clear plastic bubble on the top. Through this period, various trains were in operation, including Monorail Red, Blue, Purple, and Orange. In 2008, Disneyland got the whole completely new redesigned Mark 7 monorail train. Monorail Red was the first to arrive, followed later by Monorail Blue and Monorail Orange.
Orange is my favorite.
Oh, I love blue. Blue is so pretty. The initial problems with the car's undercarriage were considerable. It couldn't even make it around the loop without getting stuck. They spent months performing modifications and retrofits, including significant changes to the ventilation system inside the cars.
Yep.
Eventually, all the kinks were worked out.
Well, and that's a big thing to discuss too, because the older versions of the monorails had windows that actually dropped down, and you had are slid off. Did they drop or did they slide? I can't remember.
I thought they dropped down.
They dropped down.
I remember.
And so they're open from the top half, which is something the Floridians would never like in a million years think, oh my God, something that high up on a beamway had these open windows. You know, the safety people would probably freak out.
And this and the was people a big that... problem when Mach 7s came along, because they didn't have any way to open the windows at all when the trains first hit. And in the summertime, you were baking inside these cars, and they really had to experiment with a lot of different ways of not only providing some air ventilation through the car, but also eventually went to a system where they could drop the windows.
Yeah, the windows actually pop out on the bottom, just about 6 inches or so. But they actually wouldn't run the monorails if it was over, what, 89 degrees, I think, or 86 degrees.
Yeah,
they wouldn't even put them on the track when they first came out. And that was because of the heat. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be a problem considering it's always 89 or above in Central Florida from my recollection.
Well, but let's explain why they can't put, you know, because people from Florida, people from everywhere else would say, why can't you put air conditioning in these things? But it's a major facet of how the monorails work. Wayne, did you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. This is actually one of the things that made the monorail unique, is it is totally electric and always has been. There are 600-volt DC motors in each car, and as far as a climate control system, there isn't enough juice to drive it.
Because all the juice is in the beam work. Isn't all the juice powers from straight from the beam, so it's all self-contained.
The colors are what I like about the new trains. The colors are iridescent and appear to change when viewed from different angles, and I love the interior of the cars at night. They're illuminated by these futuristic blue LED light strips, which reminds me of the cars in the monorail game from Disney's Virtual Magic Kingdom online game. That was so much fun, and these cars just reminded me so much of that game. Walt Disney had intended to demonstrate that the monorail system could be adapted for cities to use as transportation systems. True statement. They actually talk about this at the Walt Disney Family Museum. The monorail was purposefully designed to include relatively tight turns, overpasses, and changes in track height in order to show that the system could be used in various conditions. The construction in the park is on about the same scale as it would be for a major metropolitan city, and this is another reason why there are so many monorail twists and turns.
I did not know that. That's really, like it was kind of, see, it would work. You don't have to bulldoze every house, you could just put the track. That's really
Walt really did have Epcot in mind from the very beginning. This was definitely one reason. He fully intended Anaheim to be converted to this system.
That would have been nice. I could have got to school faster. Keep going.
From the Tomorrowland station, the monorail immediately exits the park and these days passes through the edge of the Disney California Adventure Park on its way to the downtown Disney station. But before California Adventure, this part of the trip passed over Disneyland's massive parking lot. A lot of us older folks remember that one of the more popular games that we played during this part of the ride was Find Your Car in the Parking Lot.
Exactly.
Disneyland still allows guests to sit in the front monorail car with the monorail operator, and also in the rear car, which is just the operator car facing backwards. Generally, all you have to do is ask a cast member at the upper level station if you can ride up front, and that's all that's required. Sometimes you may have to wait a trip or two, but most cast members are very accommodating. In earlier days, younger guests who rode up front could get the Junior Monorail Pilot Certificate and the Junior Monorail Pilot Pin. Riding up front is definitely one of the best ways to ride the monorail. Here's one other note. Sometimes the monorail will operate in what they call one-way mode, and that's where all guests have to exit at each station. If you do exit at the hotel station, you will have to show your park ticket or passport to gain admittance back again, just like you are going through the front gates. As a matter of fact, that's kind of a cool thing, to take a break from the park, take the monorail, get off at Downtown Disney, and walk around the Downtown Disney or the hotel for a while. and then later on board the monorail and go back. It's
don't
also,
forget you can stop at Tortilla Joe's and get some carnitas, by the way.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I haven't done that, but I think I might. That's a good idea. I'm going to write that down.
Way back in 1959, a piece of music called the Monorail Song was written, and it has appeared in many of the Disneyland music CDs throughout the years. It was used on the TV show, the Disneyland TV show, as background music, and it is used in some of the queue lines, but it has never been used on the monorail itself.
How does that go, Wayne?
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, man.
Actually, it goes da 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 da. You better edit out this, or I will.
No, it stays. It stays. Wayne sings this week. Yay!
In 1986, the American Society of Mechanical Engineers designated the Disneyland monorail system a historic National Mechanical Engineering Landmark. Cool. Each landmark is represented by a progressive step in the evolution of mechanical engineering and its influences on society. There is a plaque that is located at the top of the Tomorrowland loading platform, and it commemorates this landmark. You can actually see it there. It's really cool. You have to kind of look for it, but it's definitely there. There is talk that if a third park is created for the Disneyland Resort, that the monorail might be extended. Perhaps when that happens, it will evolve into a whole new transportation system for the resort. But one thing is definitely sure, the monorail will be around for a long time.
Thanks, Wayne, for that. All that great information about the Disneyland monorail. I look forward to maybe seeing a blog in the future.
You bet. My pleasure.
Okay, great. And Nancy and her segment with the activities offered to guests staying at the hotels of the Disneyland Resort.
You know, everybody talks about the hotels at the Disneyland Resort, the Disneyland Hotel, Paradise Pier Hotel, and the Grand Californian always being so much more expensive than the off-property hotels. And
cha-ching.
Something, thank you, Tom, something that I've always thought was fun that most people never even noticed was in their welcome packet is the adventures guide that each of those hotels offers. And what these adventures are is they are special little activities and benefits that the hotel guests get that no one else does. So when you get your packet, or if you're staying at the Paradise Pier and you come to the check-in desk, there's a wall right by that little elevator that's stuck right in the middle of the room there. There's a board mounted up on that wall, and it has the Adventures program on it. So Paradise Pier, guys, you got to go there to find it. Everybody else, it's going to be in your folder, like I said, at check-in. And what this schedule does is it has the park hours listed out for an entire week. It'll tell you when your magic mornings are, because early entry is a benefit of the Disneyland Resort hotels. And then it has a schedule of all these really cool activities. And the activities can be broken down into like four categories. The first one is unique shopping adventures. The second one is educational activities. The third one is just for fun stuff. And the fourth one is actually like story time events. So let's start off with the shopping.
Of course.
Of course. Got to start with the shopping. And I'm going to talk first about the adventures that are available to both the Disneyland Hotel guests and the Paradise Pier Hotel guests. The Grand Californian guests actually have a few more that aren't on this list.
They actually have people do the adventure for you. Because it's such an expensive hotel, you just watch as other people do it for you.
Well, what I found was interesting is which ones were shared by which hotels. So first off, the reason I want to start off with the shopping is all three hotels offer these events. And one of the things you really have to do, and they recommend that you do, is that you contact, if you're interested in doing any of these, when you check in, contact guest services or the concierge desk and check to see if there is, if it's available for the time and the day that you want. Because if they don't have enough people to fill some of the events, then they will cancel them.
You tell me these events. I'm waiting. You're talking about.
I know. Isn't it exciting? Well, these things are critical to know, because don't be disappointed if your event gets canceled because not enough people do it.
Whatever that event might be.
Right. So don't plan on saying, oh, this morning I want to get up and do this. And then when you ask, they've already...
This is
still
referring
so vague.
To...
Still so vague.
Okay.
I don't know what's going to happen. I can't wait.
I know. Aren't you excited? Okay, yes. Let's start with the shopping. First off, there's two beauty-related items.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man.
I know. You're just waiting for these. One is called the Beauty Studio at Sephora. And the other one is Disney 365, Be Your Own Superstar. So one is for grown-ups and one is for kids. And the Beauty Studio at Sephora is a $45 cost, but you get that back in a gift card. And what they do is they take you at like 8:30 in the morning into the Sephora store. Before it opens, you get the makeup experts to do makeovers on you, and then you get your $45 back as a gift card, which you can use towards same-day in-store purchases. And the minimum age for that is 13, and any teenager under 18 must be accompanied by an adult for the activity. So that's the first one. Then there's the Be Your Own Superstar, which I talked about, which allows you to bring your kids into the Disney 365 studio and get their rock star makeover, which we're going to talk about in another show in the coming weeks, with nobody else around. So you don't have to wait. You don't have to, you don't have to worry about making a reservation for it, you know.
And that's
having
kids
an interrupt
only?
Your day.
Is that kids only? I can't go in and make myself into a rock star?
You could probably go and make yourself into a rock star. Actually, they do have a guys, and it's really inexpensive, but we'll talk about that in another show. Anyway, the cost for that one is $39.95, and space is limited. But like I said, you're going in at 8:30 to 9:30 in the morning, and your kid is going to get all made up so they can spend the entire day looking glamorous in the park. So that's the next one. And then the final one of the shopping experiences is at Build-A-Bear Workshop. Okay, how many people have kids that want a Build-A-Bear?
Me.
Most.
No.
My
son is addicted. Yeah.
My son doesn't want one. We were discussing that as we walked by.
Your son is not the normal little kid. Your son is...
No, he's 10. He also doesn't... Yeah, he... Okay. He wants to do the rock star thing.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the bears. That place is freaking packed in the evenings. So if you're staying at a Disneyland hotel and your kid really desperately wants a bear, sign up to go do the workshop, and then you've got the place, it's empty, because it's closed to the public, it hasn't opened yet, and you have the people there to help you build your bear and do all that really super fast. And you only have to spend $10. That's their minimum bear purchase. So,
you don't get a discount on the stuff that you're buying with these adventures, but you get basically access when nobody else has access.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things that makes the shopping ones unique. So anyway, that's the first batch. The second batch is the challenges. And these are really, really fun. There are two different trivia challenges. One is A Pirate's Life for Me, and the other one is Trader Sam's Jungle Trivia. And both of them involve going to the guest services desk, and you receive instructions and supplies. I have not yet done these. In fact, here's how bad I was. I went to the hotel the other day to, ask about it. So I went in and I asked if I could get a copy of the maps and stuff, and they asked for my room number.
Oh, that was my question. I'll say, well, why can't I just go in? So, okay.
Yeah, so they actually want you to sign up and have a room number and everything like that.
So did you give
you said
a
room number? Did you just give a fake room number?
No, I didn't, because they'll look you up on the computer. And so I just made up some story and ran like hell.
But if they said, okay, what room, and you say 437, and then they looked you up on the computer and then go, are you Mr. Williams?
Yeah, yes. See, I didn't just
yes,
didn't
I am.
dance. I chickened out. I mean, I can talk my way into a lot of things, but I just wasn't going there right now. Anyway, what is A Pirate's Life for me and Trader Sam's Jungle Trivia, you are asking yourself because you really want to know. They both involve riding attractions. So you actually get your supplies at your hotel, and you have to pick it up between the hours of 8 and 11. You basically go to the attraction, and you do whatever's in the instructions thing.
So it's a scavenger hunt or something?
Yeah, it's kind of like a I'm assuming it's kind of like a scavenger hunt slash trivia hunt. So I'm really looking forward to staying there next time to try this. The other one I wanted to talk about, too, then, in the challenges, is the Grand Californian people. They have a completely separate challenge. And theirs is called the Grand Quest, and it's a quest that's all around the hotel. So you pick up your stuff, and you go all around the hotel. So that's the challenge thing. Now, moving on to the next category of stuff is the educational activities. And every single hotel offers a Learn to Draw Mickey Mouse class.
All right, I want to go.
And so this, all children must be accompanied by an adult 18 or older. No charge for the activity. And there's no charge for all those challenges either. But space is limited, so you do have to sign up for that one. And that one is actually held at Pinocchio's Workshop in the Grand Californian Hotel. So that's pretty, I thought that was really neat. The other educational activity offered, well, actually, there's two more educational activities offered. One offered to all three of the hotels is the Art of the Craft Tour, which is also held at the Grand Californian. And it talks about how they design the hotel, how they use the arts and crafts movement, what different facets of that movement and the architecture, the furniture, the design, the decorations, what they all mean and represent. And it's a 1-hour walking tour. Once again, it's recommended for ages 12 and up. It's free, and you just have to sign up at guest services to make sure there's, that you can get in on it. The Grand Californian, however, has another little thing that they do, and they do, educational-wise, and they do a washcloth class.
They teach you how to clean your face?
Okay,
no.
You got to explain this one.
They teach you, everybody loves the little towels and the little, the little folded up dubers. And
the towel animals.
The towel animal
stuff. Washcloth. Okay, I'm like, I don't love towels.
Well, they
teach you how to make an elephant?
That's cool.
They teach you how to make rabbits and things like that out of your washcloths. And when you finish them, it's free to do this class. But you get to keep the little sucker when you're done. So you actually officially get to go home.
And steal towels.
Okay.
You get to officially steal a towel at the Disneyland Resort. That's pretty much what I just told you about was everything the Disneyland people and the Paradise Pier people get to do. Well, guess what? If you're staying at the Grand, you get even more. They have two more classifications of activities. One is fitness activities.
Boo.
On alternating mornings. No, these are
I'm on vacation. I'm not exercising.
No.
Okay. One of these is actually super cool. One of them is kind of okay cool. The okay cool one is they actually have a rise and stretch with Pilates class. So if you're, a fitness buff, you really miss your workout, you don't want to necessarily go to the gym, you can sign up for the Pilates class in the morning before you go to the park. The one I think is actually even more super cool is...
extra way super cool.
And it is extra way super cool, is the Get Up and Go Power Walk. It is a power walk through California Adventure before the park opens.
Okay, that is extra way super cool. You're right.
Told you.
It's extra way super cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
So if you can do a fairly decent walking pace, and they don't allow strollers, your kids can't come. But if you're a single or you're a couple, they're at the resort by yourselves, or you have teen children, older teen children, that's a great family activity. You get kind of a behind-the-scenes glimpse of getting the park ready in the morning. You're the only ones with the music playing and all that. So that's really pretty nice. Now, the last category is storytelling. the Grand Californian, and this is kind of available to anybody who shows up at the right time. It's 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. at the Grand Californian, and pretty much even if you're just at the park and you're walking into the hotel around that time, you can kind of join in. And it's called Tales from the Hearth and Songs from the Hearth. It varies each day. It's a little different, so you have to kind of look at the schedule. But they have a storyteller or a singer basically telling kind of stories that are reminiscent of the arts and crafts era. So it's kind of cool. And the kids really like it. They hold it right there at the fireplace, at the big fireplace. Anyway, so you got these Tales and Songs from the Hearth, and then this other one that they're offering as a hotel guest thing, frankly, this is at all the hotels, and I have no idea why it's only listed on the Grand Californians, and that is Disney Princess Storytime.
Ooh.
No.
And they have one of the channels in the hotel is set to Disney Princess Storytime.
Again, sorry, where's the... Okay, Tom, you have a son.
where's the pirate story time?
Yeah, where's the pirate story time? I mean, I like it. I just... The kids get the shaft, man. That's all I'm saying. Now, I'm not saying I wouldn't mind watching the Princess Storytime. That's fine, but I'm just, you know...
And you know what? It's the exact same Princess Storytime that you get at the Princess Fantasy Fair when the princesses tell stories there.
All right.
It's
that
same experience.
Okay.
So you get all these extra whoop-de-doo things for your staying at an on-property hotel.
And, you know, I like to make fun of how expensive stuff is, and a lot of that's because I'm jealous. But I actually am considering, you know, maybe I should figure out when, you know, with my annual pass I can get in during the summer, you know, a midweek or something, and stay just to take advantage of some of those things, because that sounds actually really cool. So I was very skeptical when here's the segment, more extra stuff, but Disney does a good job at, if you pay, you know, you pay for our hotel or you pay for the extra thing, you're going to get some cool stuff. And
so stay tuned this summer for Tony's story on the Disney 365 makeover.
Yes, exactly. I'm there. And watching the princesses read me bedtime stories.
Oh, God, nobody wants to see that.
No, they don't. Not even me.
Oh, God, are you making me choke here?
I didn't want to mention the fact that I can't wait to go to Build-A-Bear.
Woohoo!
Right, see,
are you going to do a little spiked collar for it and everything?
See? And then you and I are both going to take up that challenge in a couple of weeks on Bats Day, right?
Woohoo! Okay,
I don't think listen out there, Orlando group. We're listening.
Okay. And I have to say this, that we used to go all the time on Bats Day, and it is one of the best freaking days to be inside the park. It really is.
I've already got my piercings picked out.
Wait, why is it one of the best freaking days?
Oh, my gosh.
People watching?
Well, okay, the people watching is really super cool. I got to admit, I really enjoy the people watching. But a lot of locals tend to avoid Bats Day.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I remember a Bats Day, 3 years ago we went or 4 years ago we went? It was like no one was there. There were no wait times.
Okay, then I'm going.
What is this, actually?
It's super, okay. Bats Day, to talk about it, is a day when the goth community, you know, in the goth community, very flamboyant dressers, very unique styles. You know, some people see them and get all freaked out, but they're really nice people that just like to dress a little funky. And they have an annual convention. And
this year it is May 6th through the 8th.
Yes, May 6th through the 8th.
Which is also Mother's Day weekend, by the way.
Woohoo! Mother's Day and Bats Day weekend.
Because they don't have mothers.
So it's on the weekend?
Oh my gosh. No, we see...
That was a joke. Goth community. I know you have mothers, and I'm happy about your great family.
For all those goths, write to Tony at WWN. Yeah.
I'd like to know the number of goths listening to this.
Goth parents and their little goth kids.
Okay, that's way... Okay, what I said was not nearly as offensive as what you just said.
No, I love it. I think it's really cool. Hey, man, there's a shop not horrendously far from my house that actually sells goth clothes for little kids.
And piercings? Oh.
No piercings.
I have friends. I'm consulting. The challenge has been laid down. I'm going. That's it.
Okay.
And by the way, you're going too, Nancy.
I know. It's fine. Pick me up on your way through.
I mean, the challenge is there.
You guys will be the goths. Tom and I can go because you guys won't be able to go on rides because you said that there's no wait times. Tom and I will get to go and go on all the rides.
There you go.
Oh, it's fabulous. And what's really fun is talk to somebody and find out what time of day that they're going to do the pictures because they do a goth day picture a couple times a day. And they pretty much every goth in the park heads straight over to in front of the castle. And it is amazing, like a couple hundred goth folks. And, I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Some of the tattoos they sport are great.
You're like the goth advocate now.
Okay, man. I'm going to confess it on the air. When I was in college, I had blonde down to my shoulders. I had a black stripe dyed in the back. Kind of a reverse skunk looking thing.
This explains.
So I am not.
Explains a lot.
Yes, it does. Well, with that note, that'll do it for this Disneyland edition of the Diz Unplugged. Thanks for listening.